Press Conference USA. Here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA TV senior analyst Jeffrey Young. Our topic on this edition of the program, global corruption. Our guest, Frank Vogel. He's co-founder of two leading international non-governmental organizations fighting corruption, Transparency International and the Partnership for Transparency Fund. Frank Vogel currently teaches at Georgetown University, writes regular blog articles on corruption for theglobalist.com, and lectures extensively. Frank is also a specialist in international economics and finance, with more than 50 years of experience in these fields. First as a journalist, he was a reporter for the Times of London, then as a senior World Bank official, and from 1990 to 2017 as the president and CEO of a consulting firm, Vogel Communications. He is also an author. His most recent book is Waging War on Corruption, Inside the Movement, Fighting the Abuse of Power. Of late, he's been doing a lot of work on the topic of money laundering and its implications for national security, economic stability and growth, the financial system, and the environment and democracy. And Frank Vogel joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Frank Vogel, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
And I'm always delighted to welcome my colleague, Jeffrey Young.
Thank you.
Well, Frank Vogel, let's talk about this incredible phenomenon that is afflicting many parts of the world, corruption. How do you define corruption?
People expect their governments to serve them. Government is to serve the interests of its citizens. Corruption is when you have exactly the reverse, when people in government serve themselves at the expense of the people. So corruption is the abuse of public office for private benefit.
You, of course, co-founded Transparency International. You're still affiliated with the organization. How does one combat this phenomenon, and how successful has your organization been in doing so?
We started 26 years ago, and we realized from the very get-go that if you are going to have an impact on curbing corruption, you had to do it country by country, and you had to have the leadership of the effort by citizens of the country. So today, we have 100 national chapters. In each of those countries, we have volunteers who are working together to find the space where they can operate. What do I mean by that? In some countries, there is a very ruthless dictatorship, which clamps down on civil society, which clamps down on freedom of the press. In those countries, the space that you may have to bring about reforms may be very small. So in some of those countries, without naming any names, my colleagues are working at local hospitals. They're working at local schools, trying to see that the nurses and the doctors and the school teachers are not, in fact, extorting the poor people who come to them for their services. Very many of the people who work at the local level on service delivery to reduce corruption in poor countries are women. They are often the most affected by corruption at the petty corruption level, and they are also the most effective very often in seeing that citizens have their rights at that local level. In countries where there is more freedom and expanding freedom, but where it's very difficult, we find that our organization is working to try to secure legal reform, to try to secure transparency in law enforcement, trying to hold elected politicians to account.
Now, I will let my colleague Jeffrey get a word in edgewise, but one more question. Is it fair to say that corruption is more prevalent in authoritarian countries as opposed to democracies?
Absolutely. But when we really talk about the prevalence of corruption, we need to be, in my view, very specific. Let's look at the problem from the perspective of the victims. In many authoritarian countries, the governments, and let's call them kleptocrats, are stealing so much of the public funds that the result is that vast numbers of people in those countries are living in desperate poverty, and it really shouldn't be that way. Many of these countries have natural resources. They could be wealthy, but these people are living in terrible poverty. We have corruption in every country in the world, but the impact in terms of the humanitarian impact or the security impact is far greater in the authoritarian countries of the world and the poorer countries of the world.
Now let me turn to my colleague, Jeffrey.
Mr. Vogel, I'd like you to continue with this and amplify, because I think that there's another salient point that's a plank in this discussion, and that is that endemic corruption destabilizes a society as well as steals from a society. When you have endemic corruption, it raises security problems and issues. When people have had their future stolen from them, it is easier for them to pick up a gun and feel justified. Many of the insurgencies and much of the trouble that we see in parts of the world is caused by people who have been left behind and stolen from and feel no alternative but to resort to violence to try to regain what they feel was taken. And I'd like you to be able to speak to that.
I think you're right. Certainly, you can find that some of the major reasons why Boko Haram grew in Nigeria, Al-Shabaab in Somalia, and others like that is directly related to the breakdown of law enforcement in those countries and to the massive corruption, not only in the civilian government, but also in the military itself. The other side of that, though, is not everybody who feels so abused by the system becomes a terrorist.
True.
We have seen an enormous number of public protests in recent times where people have had the courage to go in the street and peacefully demand a new regime, demand law enforcement, fight corruption. So if you look at what happened in Sudan, you look at what happened in Algeria, these are marvelous examples of countries that were run by truly authoritarian, ruthless regimes where we never really thought that there could be a transfer of power to a more open government system. But the public has come out, and they've come out peacefully with huge courage, and they are creating a transformation. Whether it is sustained, we have to see that. But there is, in other words, some good news resulting, and not only the terrorist side, where you're absolutely right.
Well, that's an excellent point, Frank Vogel. Lebanon also comes to mind with protests in the streets, protesting against corruption by their government.
Iraq.
Exactly, absolutely. But let's turn back now to countries where perhaps we'd like to see even more protests. What about Angola? Wealthy, oil, diamonds. The war has ended, you know, over a decade ago. And yet we still see so much poverty and so much diversion of the wealth that could be going to the people into the pockets of leaders. Let's talk about Angola and recent charges against Isabel dos Santos, the daughter of course, José Eduardo dos Santos, the former president.
Who was president for some 30 years. One of the great mysteries in the world is the amount of money that natural resources companies pay to host governments in royalties, in exploration fees, and so on. Angola is a good example. It has vast oil resources. It receives license fees and royalties from international oil companies. And the question is, where does that money go? And it's quite clear that for many, many years, that money went into the coffers of the Dos Santos family and their cronies, their associates, and a tiny elite in Angola. And whilst it should have been spent to improve the livelihoods of all the people of the country and improve the economy, it didn't. So now you've got a successor government that still has not been transparent about what it's doing with the oil revenues. It is allowing a certain degree more freedom, more civil society work. It has decided to go after the Dos Santos family, and Isabel Dos Santos, known as the richest woman in Africa, has become obviously a target, and they are seeking to freeze all her assets, which may run into billions of dollars, but we'll have to see whether that actually happens.
And of course, the so-called developed world, Europe, United States, they have a role to play in either aiding and abetting or even encouraging corruption, because we know much of her wealth, that is Isabel dos Santos, is actually in Portugal and enriching Portugal, and they're benefiting and encouraging it.
Yes, in the case of Portugal, if you are wealthy, you can buy citizenship. It's called a golden passport. You could do that in Cyprus. You could do that in Malta. You could do that in a few other countries. And so very wealthy, crooked people find a way to find a safe haven by doing exactly that. But we ought to expand this topic just a little bit. There is an estimate of anywhere between $1 trillion and $2 trillion of illicit money, dirty cash, loot, that goes from the governments of countries around the world into international investments. And it goes into the United States, it goes into the UK, it goes to Switzerland, it goes to countries which really ought to do much, much more to clamp down on that, to stop all the enablers of that loot, and to basically expose the dirty money flows. So yes, what Portugal is doing for Isabel dos Santos could be writ large, and you could mention many countries with far larger amounts of dirty cash.
Indeed. Of course, the UK and Russia comes to mind. But first, we'll take a break and we'll continue our conversation. You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Frank Vogel, co-founder of Transparency International. That's a leading anti-corruption organization, and author of the recently published book, Waging War on Corruption, Inside the Movement, Fighting the Abuse of Power. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA TV senior analyst Jeffrey Young. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener in Istanbul, Turkey, Kenan Suganesh. Teşekkür ederim, Kenan. If you want to hear your name on the air and home country, please send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And now, returning to our interview with Frank Vogel, let me now turn to my colleague Jeffrey Young.
Well, one thing I want to bring up before we finish the conversation that we already are in the middle of, and that is the structure of corruption. In order for corruption to take place, there are two, as you're very well aware, essential elements. One of them is enablers, and the other is protectors. I want to use as my example the former petroleum minister of Nigeria, Dzani Alison Madueke. This is a person who is alleged to have taken as much as $800 million from the Ministry of National Petroleum. And in order for her to do that, she had to have two elements. Number one, enablers. So people under her and with her in the ministry obviously had to be connected to her corruption, her alleged corruption, so that the money that was being collected by the ministry could be funneled through her hands so that the money could be deposited in private banks, et cetera, which it was. And enablers and protectors. The protection side, the allegations are rampant that her protector was none other than the president of Nigeria, and he was the one who facilitated this. And perhaps circumstantial evidence to this is the fact that the day before Buhari's inauguration, Madueke gets on a plane and flees to London. An amazing coincidence, Mr. Vogel. What do you think?
I could tell you 50 stories like that. And the enablers that you talk about, there's another form of enabler. Those are the people who bought on her behalf vast properties in Manhattan and outside of London. And the U.S. Department of Justice has brought court actions against her associates and have itemized that. But I would like to just add, sometimes we get so fascinated by the individual stories that we forget why they're important. Nigeria is an enormously wealthy country, and yet it has an infant mortality rate worse than Bangladesh, which is one of the poorest countries in the world. The destitution in much of Nigeria is a direct result of the massive petroleum theft of which you just talked about. We need to continue to concentrate on the victims of corruption. Because if we don't realize that corruption in many parts of the world is a humanitarian crisis, then we are likely to come to the point where we say, oh, well, we hear so much about corruption. There's this great story and that great story. And we lose sight of the enormous violence it does to human beings across so much of the world. And in the case of sub-Saharan Africa, we are talking about 20 countries which have enormous natural resources where the degree of poverty is absolutely a direct consequence of this problem.
Agreed. I want to bring up something else, too, that you recently wrote about that is sadly prevalent. It's been prevalent for ages, but it's intolerable, and that is sextortion. The idea that people are physically exploited in difficult situations. And a simple example is the mass migration from the Sahel and Western Africa that goes up north and winds up on the Libyan coast. And these people are taken by human traffickers and their money is taken from them. Women are pressed into sex slavery, into servitude. They're sold as chattel slaves. This is something that's been going on for centuries, but it's something that's especially acute now because with the situation such as these migrations and refugee situations, they're being exploited hugely. Please amplify on this and tell our audience more.
Sextortion is a phrase that is used to describe the extortion of people for sex rather than for money. But it is corruption. You're right, it's been going on for a long time. But the fact of the matter is that only in relatively recent times in the United States, in Western Europe, have we had the so-called Me Too movement. We focused on celebrities. We focused on the sexual harassment that they have perpetrated. And in doing that, this issue has really hit the headlines in much of the Western world. But in that, that should be an opportunity to say, hey, we ought to open our eyes to what has been happening for so long in other parts of the world. There are young female students at universities, for example, in Nigeria, who in order to get a passing grade are asked for sexual favors. If they don't provide those sexual favors, they fail, and their opportunity for an education and in many cases for a good life for their families is gone. We are hearing more and more stories about this. The reason this issue is so ignored is because it's so hard to get data on it. It's because so many women have many, many reasons to fear speaking out about the problem, admitting even to their families that they are victims. It is culturally a very, very difficult issue to address. It is a hard issue to address because aid agencies and others always want to see results. And it's very hard to prove that you are making progress, even when you do good initiatives. It is the hardest area of the anti-corruption world. It is one which has millions of victims and where I believe we are starting to see at long, long last major efforts. And these are efforts by young people in many developing countries from the campuses of universities in Nigeria and Cameroon to elsewhere who are starting to say enough, let's organize, let's do something ourselves.
Frank Vogel, I want to turn back to our conversation about dirty money. You said trillions of dollars are being invested with dirty money in places like the United States or the UK. Talk more about that and particularly what role Russia plays, Putin's Russia, in this scheme.
Well, I'll give you what I find an absolutely amazing situation. The largest company in Russia is Gazprom, which is largely controlled by the Kremlin. It provides a very large amount of money directly in income to President Putin and his associates. And this has been very well documented. Now, let's go back almost 2 years now to Salisbury, England, where Russian agents tried to murder a former Russian spy. They were detected. Fortunately, they failed in their assassination attempt. They were detected. And 3 weeks later, the British Prime Minister stood up in the House of Commons in London, announced that she was expelling 23 Russian diplomats and that the British government would start to take action against suspicious money in London. On that very same day, Gazprom listed new bonds on the London Stock Exchange and raised £400 million from international investors, maybe Russians based in London. So the money was laundered through that bond deal back to Russia. The next day, they raised another 750 million euros in European stock exchanges. Nobody said a word. The international sovereign bond market has been enormously helpful to Russia and to other corrupt regimes. And when you look at sovereign bonds, you are talking about billions of dollars. You are talking about $2 billion from a Mozambique bond issue where bankers from Credit Suisse paid government officials bribes so that they could manage the bond issues. Then most of the $2 billion was stolen by those same government officials. And an even bigger case was when bankers from Goldman Sachs helped the government of Malaysia to raise $6.5 billion, of which so far $4.5 billion is unaccounted for. So these huge bond deals, of which the Russians have been very, very active, but many others as well, have been the primary source of which dirty money is actually invested. It dwarfs the amounts of money put into real estate, even though real estate gets so much attention because you can see the buildings, you can feel the buildings. You don't see those bonds, which are in some safe or in some somewhere else. And finally, the Russians and others all use all manner of holding companies and secretive companies in order to hide their actual investments in the Western world. The IMF has estimated that there is $7 trillion of funds managed by Caribbean island registered secretive companies. These are numbers that you and I really can't comprehend, but we are talking about threats to our financial system.
Indeed. So the financial system is complicit in these transactions.
And at the moment, many in that system making a lot of money out of it. It's very profitable.
Sure. So greed pretty much trumps
integrity.
Integrity, exactly. Yeah. Therefore, that begs the question, you know, what can ordinary people do, since it seems like the many leaders in these autocracies and even in democracies, the system seems to favor or seem to be bothered by this dirty money. What can we all do to combat this? How do you see the press, the role of the press, civil society, and so forth?
There are lots of specific issues I could raise. But the most fundamental issue, which is really why we started Transparency International in the first place, we have to still raise public awareness further to understand that what is at stake is fundamentally our system of the rule of law, yes, where law enforcement is fair, where it is honest, where it is respected by all citizens. We are in a battle across the world between our democratic system of the rule of law and the corrupt system that we see by so many authoritarian kleptocratic regimes, where essentially all the institutions of law enforcement, police, judiciary, intelligence services, all are manipulated by those in power to serve their interests against the public interest. We have to make people across the world still more sensitive to how fundamental this issue is to human rights and to democracy and freedom.
Absolutely, and certainly in democracies where there's a measure of accountability through the press, through the judiciary, the rule of law, as you say, we have a much better chance at combating this type of corruption. Jeffrey.
I also think that one of the essential elements is transparency and registration. It is an embarrassment that the United States is in many ways no better than the Channel Islands or Nevis, in that you can go to Delaware, you can go to Nevada, and you can set up an anonymous LLC, and these corporations that do the setups for you provide cardboard cutout directors, their names on pieces of paper. Who these people are and what these people are is another story. But the idea is that here in the United States, we have a system of corporate registration where you can go to Delaware and form anonymous corporation LLC, and they just give you a board of directors of names. And the next thing you know, you have a totally opaque operation through which you can shove as much money or property or loot or whatever as you want to. And here we are in a country where we demand transparency and accountability of our elected officials, and yet we have laws on the books that contravene this very interest. Your thought?
You're absolutely right. And there is legislation in Europe, in many countries. It's passed already in the UK and in the US today, being proposed to register, as you said. But it's not by any means the whole solution. There is more than enough official evidence, i.e. from the US Treasury, from the British Treasury, from the US State Department, from others who have gone public with major reports on these issues, that terrorist organizations around the world use the banking system, use these holding companies as mechanisms to finance their operations, including the US banking system. And we have to understand that when we talk about registration here, we have to find the right way to do it to protect legitimate privacy of people and at the same time be sensitive to the national security risks that these sort of secretive companies pose, not just for the US, but for the world. The amounts of funds that get laundered and used going through the US and international system to support terrorist organizations and the purchase of weapons of mass destruction is very frightening. And it is a major element of corruption that I think, frankly, for the first time, we are starting to see major Western governments take more seriously than they have done for a long time.
Frank Vogel, I want to return to conflict-ridden countries where the United States and other international donors provide aid and assistance. For example, Afghanistan, you know, the longest war now that America has been involved in. Again, a small country, but an enormous amount of corruption. How do you see the role of, let's say, the United States and others in perhaps inadvertently somehow increasing corruption as opposed to decreasing it? And we're just in this constant spiral where violence continues. We have the terrorist threats of the Taliban and Islamic State, but the government itself is under protest by its people for corruption.
In the case of Afghanistan, the United States has put in over $130 billion of so-called reconstruction funds. A very large amount of that cannot be accounted for. The World Bank has run a consortium of donors. They've put in over $10 billion, and they've been very heavily criticized for the bad administration, the fact that a lot of the money has disappeared. But let's go a little bit wider, if we may. The countries that come out as the most perceived to be the most corrupt in the world in the Corruption Perception Index published every year by Transparency International, and our new index will be out at the end of January. The countries that come at the very bottom, Somalia, Sudan, Afghanistan, South Sudan, are all countries in conflict. What we find as we look around the world, if you take the data from Freedom House, you take the data from the Global Peace Index, the data from Transparency International, put it all together, and you find the countries with the most violence are the ones with the most corruption and with the least human freedom. When we, the United States, sends troops into a country, it is very hard to define a mission that not only seeks stability and security, but needs to address these other things as well. We've been very bad at that. It took the United States military high command many years before they realized that they would never get security unless they addressed the corruption issue. They used to look at these as separate matters. We need to look at all of these issues of violence, lack of freedom, corruption, and security together. It's a huge and very complicated challenge.
Frank Vogel is co-founder of two leading international non-governmental organizations fighting corruption. He currently teaches at Georgetown University, and he is the author of Waging War on Corruption, Inside the Movement, Fighting the Abuse of Power. Frank Vogel, thank you for a terrific conversation. We'd love to have you back in the coming months.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guest. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. And joining me on the program was VOA TV senior analyst Jeffrey Young. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
This is